Welcome, everyone, to episode 286 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and since we talked about which teams should be buyers at the trade deadline last episode, we're going to look at the flip side of that today, hit on which teams should be sellers. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. So yesterday evening, we had like a sort of a pre-Christmas with my dad and his wife who came over and exchanged presents. And my son, the youngest one, Jordan, 5 months old, got a wooden duck on wheels, and he spent approximately 35 minutes just French kissing its beak. And it was just the most adorable thing I've ever seen, and I deeply regret not recording it and putting it on Twitter, because that's the kind of content that would have gotten like 500,000 retweets.
Oh,
it was
totally.
So adorable. It was perfect. At one point, he started to blow into the beak because he thought that would do something. It was fantastic. And this morning we brought it up again to see if he would duplicate the success. And lo and behold, another 20-minute French kissing session. It was perfect. Yeah.
This confirms my theory that dogs and babies are basically the same thing.
I think that's very fair. Yep.
Well, I saw Star Wars yesterday and actually loved it. So
that's great.
For anyone who has not seen it yet, don't necessarily be deterred from all of the negative reviews. You might hate it, I don't know, but it's not as bad as everyone makes it sound. So,
well, I mean, it's you know, in the eye of the beholder kind of movie, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
but if you go into it with low expectations, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. That's all I'll say.
I can get behind that. I'm glad you enjoyed yourself. I'd rather have the people loved it than hated it, because that means they didn't waste, you know, $15,
$20. Right. Well, you know, it's 2019. It's hard to derive pleasure out of anything. Sometimes you think Ben Simmons is Michael Carter Williams. So I'm trying to bring some positivity to the world.
See, you actually wanted to avoid this topic. You were the one who wanted to avoid it, and now you brought it up. Now we have to talk about it.
No, I'm just going to hit and run troll and move on, just like the original perpetrator of the crime. Instead, Mort, let's talk about potential sellers at the trade deadline.
Well, clearly the Sixers should be sellers on Ben Simmons, right?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. Let's disregard the poison pill. Let's just sell him, trade him for whoever. I don't care. In general, sellers are going to be teams that either have a bunch of bloated expiring contracts that they get something for, teams out of the playoff race, we'll hit on a couple teams that are in the conversation, but for whatever reason, they may not care. They may just want to get rid of whatever productive veterans they have anyway. So we'll start more in the East. I think a team that is nowhere near the playoff conversation is the Cleveland Cavaliers. But if you're talking about expiring contracts, that's basically all the Cavs have.
They have a lot. They have Tristan Thompson, Brandon Knight, Jordan Clarkson, John Henson, Matthew Dellavedova, Ante Sicic, which, you know, I probably wouldn't trade him. I would look to see what he can do. He hasn't really gotten a whole lot of chances, I feel like. Mm-hmm. But they also have Kevin Love, who is not an expiring contract, but a good player on admittedly an overpriced contract. So it's they just have so many trade pieces, I think. They're going nowhere. So yeah, they need to do something. And I don't suspect the Cavaliers ever being a legitimate player in free agency, because LeBron is not going to be interested in coming back there once again.
Right.
But so that means if you take on contracts that extends past 2021, I wouldn't hate that.
No. Yeah. I'm all for that, in fact.
So last episode we talked about Eric Gordon in Houston. Mm-hmm. Would you, if you were the Rockets, right, would you move a sack and sacrifice Eric Gordon's like long-term contract there for, you know, a half a year rental of Jordan Clarkson? and then maybe give up whatever second round draft picks they have.
Because they have no first round pick.
They really don't, no. Yeah. Or do you hang on to Jordan Clarkson if you're the Cavs going into the summer and actually re-sign him to a deal that is movable later on?
Because Jordan Clarkson isn't all... I mean, he's in his age 27 season.
Yes.
But, like, you know, he's not in his 30s at this point. He turned 27 in June. So he's not on the same developmental timeline as Garland and Sexton. But, you know, could he be their Lou Williams for the next 5 years? Possibly. Like, you know, he's shooting 37, a career high 37.1% from three this year. He's never going to be a super high efficiency shooter. He's at 44.2% this year, but you know, guys averaging almost 15 points off the bench in only 23 minutes. So I don't think there is a urgency to move him. I think if you can get, like, I wouldn't just give him up for like a top 55 protected second round pick. Like, I would want something back of value for both him and Tristan Thompson. Whereas, you know, go down a little bit, like a Brandon Knight, a John Henson, Matthew Dellavedova. Those guys, I think, are more in the line of, like, these are just expiring contracts. We don't care what we get back in return.
Yeah.
We might even use them as, you know, those are the guys who I would flip for longer-term salary, because then you could at least say, like, we're just trading you salary relief, so you have to give us something of value in return just for that.
Right. So maybe that's the play. But here's the thing. You can do that with Houston specifically because they want bodies who can play.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I mean, Thompson, I think, is a really interesting one. We were talking about Clint Capella with Boston last time. Like, Tristan Thompson would be another interesting guy for Boston. Like, guys averaging 13 and 10. You know, not an elite shot blocker by any means, but a big body to throw in there. He's owed $18.5 million this year, so it's the salary matching component of that's going to be tricky, as we hit on last time, if you're not going to give up any of your main pieces. But he's at least, he fits that archetype of what they would presumably be looking for.
Yeah.
I've also seen, like, a Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson for Hassan Whiteside and Kent Bazemore thrown around. Which, you know, if you're talking about Portland, like, with Portland and Kevin Love in particular, you would have to give up Whiteside for the salary matching component, most likely. But then, until Nurkic comes back, you are very, very thin up front. So, adding Tristan in that deal as well, that, like, just gives you a whole new front court. And then you've got, you know,
no wing depth whatsoever.
Right, right. But you have Love and Tristan for now, with Nurkic and Collins potentially coming back later in the season. All of a sudden, your front court looks good, at least.
I would agree. I mean, I would probably look at Larry Nance instead, because he's on a very reasonable deal that declines in value. And he can shoot the three, unlike Tristan Thompson.
Yeah, right.
I know that Tristan has experimented with the shot, but yeah, I mean, he's not at that point where he's a reliable three-point shooter, I would argue. No, but it's interesting. Like, they have so many different contracts where you actually can use them for different things. Like, you alluded to, like, Brandon Knight, John Henson, and Matthew Dellavedova are basically dead money. So those are the contracts that you use to just take on even worse deals for the payment of, like, draft picks or young players.
Yep.
Whereas both Tristan and Jordan Clarkson, like, they have some level of value. Like, they're not dead money whatsoever. You can actually get something back right now that is good. Like, but maybe we've talked about this before, though. Remember when we talked about, like, maybe if you actually offer someone who's really, really good as an expiring contract, and you go, you know what, we are willing to take on a horrible contract, and we're not even going to give you just an expiring contract. We're going to give you an expiring contract with a guy who can play.
Yeah.
Like, maybe, does that even, like, does that help them maybe increase the value of whatever they can squeeze out as payment? Like, do you maybe get a first-round draft pick that is top 5 protected instead of top 15 protected or something like that? Like, I don't know. I think it's interesting to at least explore, and I will give the Cavs this. Because they have so many different type of contracts, they can really explore the trade market. They have so many different avenues they can go to here, which is really intriguing. And yeah. It's also very sad that this is the best, you know, asset that the Cavs have are potentially expiring.
Right, right. Well, I mean, that really emphasizes, like, this is a very important time for them, because if they don't make a move and just let all these guys expire, potentially leave in free agency, like, that is a waste of a potential asset that they could have added to this rebuild. So, yeah. You know, you probably haven't, unless you're from Cleveland, you probably haven't spent that much time thinking about the Cleveland Cavaliers really since LeBron left, but they are quietly in a very pivotal time in their rebuilding process where, you know, after this year, their books are like shockingly clean. I mean, yeah. They have
especially
Love.
If they move Love.
Right. Yeah. If they move Love, they have like $30 million on the books, but you know, even with Love, they only have $67.3 million in guaranteed salary next year. They're going to have almost $50 million in cap space. So they have plenty of room. As you said, they're not going to be major free agent players. Like, there aren't going to be that many teams with cap space, but I can't imagine, you know, the top-tier free agents are going to be like, yeah, oh yeah, we're just going to chase the money and go sign with Cleveland to waste the rest of our prime with, you know, early 20s guards who might not fit all that well together.
Yeah. Nobody's going to go on vacation to Cleveland.
No. Joakim Noah is right.
Yep. So basically, just to wrap up the Cavs here.
Yeah.
What should they do?
I mean, I think you're right in that if you offer Thompson and Clarkson in particular to a team with bad contracts, you can probably extract even more than you could with a Knight, Henson, Delly type thing. Right. I mean, I would be looking to move anyone. Garland and Sexton, I think you gotta give this a little more time just to see it out. I wouldn't be in a rush to move any of the young guys, but yeah, any of these expirings and Love should all be on the market, and the expirings in particular, I just think you take really the best deal you can find by February 6th and move on.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, Kevin Porter as well, like I would throw him in the conversation with the, you know, Garland and Sexton as well.
Yeah.
He's been surprisingly good, I feel.
Yeah, right. I don't think there's any urgency to move any of the young guys, like, see how that plays out. But
yeah,
anyone who doesn't fit on that timeline, yeah, what the hell?
Yeah, everyone who's basically 25 or older.
Right, yeah.
Should be fair game, yeah.
Yeah. All right, we've talked about the Knicks too much lately, and we've basically said this was their strategy from the summer, so we're going to spend roughly 2 minutes on them.
Okay.
They should also do this. They should just sell everyone. Everyone they signed to a 2-year deal with the second year team option should be fair game. Anyone else?
There's a lot of talk chatter about Marcus Morris. I mean, yeah. He seems to be the only piece that, you know, from a personality and locker room perspective, I'm not a fan of Morris whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But it's like teams are looking at him to bring in some versatility at both forward slots, and he can shoot the three and whatever.
Yeah,
I wouldn't give up a ton for him though. I've heard that people are kind of like, hey, maybe a first rounder. Like,
no,
that's a lot in my ears, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it depends on the situation. Like the Clippers apparently are interested.
Hmm.
I don't know what you like. What's the value for him?
I would not give up a first round pick for him.
Right?
Yeah. A second seems fine.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, yeah, he's averaging a team high 18.7 points a game, shooting 47.2% from three this year. So he's doing his best Davis Bertans impression. But no, I think for the Knicks as well, it's just like whatever you can get for any of these guys. This is the whole point.
Yeah.
If you weren't going to use your cap space to get players and picks in the summer, then you didn't sign all these guys to 2-year deals with second year team options or second year non guaranteed salaries. Like, this was the whole point in making all of these signings. Take advantage of it while you can.
Right. I mean, it's just such a difficult situation as well, because Julius Randle, who was supposed to have like the most value, has just underdelivered.
Yeah.
It's been a rough go. Like the poor habits have just continued.
Yep.
I don't think he has positive trade value at this point.
Yeah, I don't think you're getting a first for him.
No. That seems unreasonable.
Yeah. But I do think the Knicks are going to be better once they clear out some of these mercenaries. It's just like you created a negative locker room environment the second you signed all these guys to two-year deals, or with, you know, non-guaranteed two-year deals, because you were making them play for their next contract right away. Of course, they were just
going to be out. Well, no one saw that coming, of course.
No, impossible. A well-constructed team, according to the GM and president there.
Last note on the Knicks before we move on hastily.
Yes.
I would love for the Dallas Mavericks to look at a Frank Ntilikina.
Yeah, free Frank. Free Frank.
Yeah. I think the Mavs and Ntilikina is just... I think it fits.
Yeah, I would like that too.
Yeah.
Let's go into the Washington Wizards, Mort, because they... Because they signed Bradley Beal to the two-year extension, he is not eligible to be traded this year. Otherwise, that would be the only trade discussion anyone is having for the next 6 weeks.
Right.
Instead, a surprising guy who came kind of out of nowhere is Davis Bertans.
Did he come out of nowhere? I know that he has surprised people to the extent that he surprised people. But, I mean, he was always a good player.
He was always a good shooter. Was he this high volume of a shooter?
No.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he shot 42.9% from three last year on 4.4 attempts per game. So, like, to your point, he's been a great shooter for a while. You know, career 41.4%. This year, he is shooting 44.7% on 8.7 three-point attempts per game.
Yeah. And look, this is a dude who's 6'10", 6'9", 6'10", whatever.
Yeah.
Like, who dribbles the ball up the court and will gun in the face of a defender.
Yeah, right.
From 28 feet.
This is not only catch and shoot. This is, like, pull-up jump shots in transition. Like, it's just something you expect to see from, you know, a Steph Curry, a Dame Lillard, a Trae Young. It's even Luka. This is the kind of thing that you would, you know, they are known for. This is what Davis Bertans is doing, too. I'm trying to look up. Because I wrote about him recently at the Basketball Writers, and kind of like what about their dilemma, the Wizards' dilemma of whether or not to trade him. And here we go. So this is shot distance of at least 27 feet this year. Harden is number one with 52. These are made field goals.
Yeah.
Lillard is second with 40. Trae Young is third with 38. Davis Bertans is fourth in the NBA with 27 feet or further, 36 of 74 from that range.
You know what his average shot distance is? 22.2 feet.
It's amazing. God.
Okay, so let's be real about this. You know, there is a question of whether this is sustainable to some extent.
Yep.
I don't think he's not going to crab out. In that sense, like he's a very, very good shooter. I don't think even if he goes back a little bit, he declines just a little bit, I don't think he's going to be like a sub 40% shooter from downtown. I don't think he's going to be an inefficient shooter at any point. But now comes like the interesting part of this discussion as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's 27.
Yep.
He's an expiring contract.
Yep.
Next year, because of the year that he's having right now, he is going to command, at the very least, double up the money.
Right. He's on a $7 million expiring contract right now. Correct. So very easy to match salary. Like, you know, we talked a lot about guys like Kevin Love and even Danilo Gallinari, who we'll hit later as well. Like, it's harder to match salaries for $20, $25, $30 million players. $7 million is easy.
Right. It is. So what the Wizards should do here is basically take a meeting. And they should figure out, what are we willing to spend? What type of contract, through back channeling, are we hearing that he is interested in? What kind of competitors are out there? That's easy. Everyone.
Right. Every contender.
Every contender. And then they should gauge the trade market just to hear what's out there. Because if, you know, this is a team that's going to pivot at some point. I can't imagine they're going to ultimately hang on to Bradley Beal. I just can't.
Mm-hmm.
They're not there. If someone out there has a pretty good rookie or, you know, a guy on a rookie contract.
Yeah.
Who's willing to move him for Bertans so that team can be more competitive right now. Mm-hmm. And that rookie shows considerable potential. I'm probably going to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. But outside of that, like, I don't... If I'm the Wizards, I'm not looking for another prime player because what's the point?
Right. No, absolutely. I think
that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you're looking for someone in the same age range as Thomas Bryant, Rui Hachimura, Troy Brown, your favorite player in the NBA. Like...
You know, you're looking He's for good. Someone. Give him time.
Yeah, I know. I'm not giving up on him. Even Mo Wagner. You know, you're looking for guys in that age range rather than... Yeah, I mean, winning now doesn't matter. You're, what, 8-19? Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's not happening this year. John Wall will come back next year. You're still... Like, this team just doesn't have a ceiling with those two guys, unfortunately. It sucks, but, like, Wall... The odds of him being as good as he was prior to all these injuries, it's just very unlikely. So I'm with you. At some point, you know, in the next year or two, you would think Beal is probably legit up for grabs at this point. But, you know, he might just be having fun. This high, like, their defense is terrible. But they're
leaning into the all-offense thing.
Yeah. And, they're averaging 117.7 points a game. I'm going to guess third highest in the league, it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at least they're making it fun. Like, if you're going to be on a crappy team, like, just at least let Bradley Beal go gun. You know, get his all-NBA appearance. That's fine. But, yeah, Bertans, I think, is, like, he's probably the most interesting guy for me at the trade deadline.
And I think I have a trade.
Oh, okay. Well, I just think every single contender is going to want to go for him. I said this on Twitter recently. Like, he is what he is at the trade deadline is going to be what Dwayne Dedman was during free agency, where, like, every team's fan base thinks they're being really savvy because they're like, hey, this Dwayne Dedman guy, he's really good. We're going to sign him with the mid-level exception. And now it's like, hey, this Davis Bertans guy, have you seen what he's doing this year? I bet no one's watching the Wizard. It's like, no, everyone knows what Davis Bertans is doing. Like, you're not going to sneak in and, like, steal Davis Bertans with a second-round pick. He's getting a first, I think.
Yeah. So, the trade that I have right here, and really it depends on the situation, because actually the team that I have him to, I also have on the sellers list. But this is a team that can pivot. This is a team where you don't really know whether they're buying or selling.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Detroit Pistons.
Interesting. Okay.
Thon Maker... And the big piece, Sekou Doumbouya.
Okay.
It adds up.
Yeah.
It's just shy of $7 million, but, like, you know, with the 125% rule, it's fine.
Yeah.
And like, that's a piece I would probably do if I'm the Wizards, because you're getting, like, Doumbouya.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on whether they value. Do they want a prospect who they've at least been able to see in some NBA action, even though in Doumbouya's case it is very limited NBA action? Or do they want the mystery box, like...
Don't know. Yeah. I mean, they have Giannis already, so, like, it's the need for,
right.
The need for Doumbouya may not be there, but...
Giannis 2.0.
Giannis 2.0, yeah. That's never getting old.
No.
I don't know, but I mean, in terms of value, I wouldn't hate that.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, like, more so that it should be contenders that goes after Bertans. But I think just teams that are win now mode, or with the Pistons' potential win now mode, even though they shouldn't be, but we'll get back to that.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I know he is a popular target on Sixers Twitter, and he would give that team a lot of what they need. Unfortunately, I think it probably takes Mike Scott, which would kill a large portion of the fan base just for salary matching purposes to get Bertans. But maybe you could finagle. You could do like Zaire Smith and Jonah Bolden instead. And, you know, that Zaire Smith is... I don't think the Sixers are sellers by any means. I think they're going to be buyers at the trade deadline. But, like, if they're really going in on this all-in window, Zaire Smith has given them nothing this year. I don't necessarily think it's the right move to just deplete all of your young talent. But that's the guy who, if they do get involved on a Bertans or a Bogdan Bogdanovic, something like that, I think that's the chip they end up dangling.
Right. There's also this thing with the Wizards. They could also go in a completely different direction. Right now we're talking about them accumulating at young assets and developing like, or just basically creating a pretty significant pool of young players. There's also another option here, and that is basically relinquishing young guys to get off of John Wall's contract. I don't necessarily think they should, but considering you don't know what kind of state John Wall's going to be in when he returns,
right?
You know, maybe if you get a an offer of someone who's willing to just absorb his entire deal, and give you an immediate expiring, you know, or enough expirings to make this happen,
right?
But their demands are like, I don't know, Troy Brown, Admiral Schofield, Maurice Wagner, whatever, or and a future first or what something like really a where the training team says, we'll take John Wall's contract off your hands, but we damn sure want to get paid for it.
Right, right.
Do you do it? They would have to have that conversation, I feel like, at the very least.
They would at least have the conversation. I personally would not do that because it feels like you're just making a second mistake to clean up your first mistake.
Yeah.
And, like, where does that leave you? You're just going to have nothing of... You'll have Beal and that's it. And then, like, at that point, you just have to trade Beal for a package to, like, restart your franchise, really.
Yeah.
So...
I think you're right. I think because ultimately what you want is when you trade Beal, you want to get, you know, young assets to pair with what you already have.
Right.
Not to just basically fill up the pool again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's... You're right. It's a conversation they'll probably have in the coming weeks. I mean, I go back to Bertan, like... I think you're right as well as saying that, you know, they need to have a conversation and say, all right, what's the most we're willing to pay this guy? You know, David Aldridge of The Athletic had a report out recently where one former front office executive said he's like, he's probably going to get 2 years, 15 to 20 million per year. And then another guy said, no, you know, there aren't that many teams with cap space. That seems unrealistic. But yeah, I mean, it starts with, all right, if I'm the Wizards, am I willing to pay Davis Bertans 2 years, 30 million, 2 years, 40 million next year? If not, then you have to trade them by the deadline.
Right. Guess which executive I disagree with. Because honestly, it takes one team.
Yeah.
It takes just one team to make a mistake.
Yeah. And even, I mean, he will definitely get, if nothing else, he will get the non-taxpayer mid-level.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But, I mean, it wouldn't.
that should be like the minimum he accepts.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that'll be in the ballpark of $10 million a year next year. I could double check, but because it was over $9 million this year. So
yeah, it's going to be significant. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, like you're talking at least 2 years, 20. Yeah. It looks like if the cap comes in at 116 as projected, the non-taxpayer will start at 9.8 and then, yeah. So it'll be like 2 years, 20 million. If I'm the Wizards, I lean toward trading him just because I think you can get something genuinely good in return. But,
right.
But I understand, you know, if you're, I mean, he's only 27 and he just turned 27.
He's not old.
Yeah. Like you could re-sign him and he fits in, you know, he could be a long-term piece for you as well. So I think you're right. It just comes down to, are you willing to re-sign him and how much are you willing to pay him? And if not, then you definitely have to trade him. But I don't think it's like they are. It's not like the Knicks where it's like there's absolutely no point to keeping this guy around. You know, if you're willing to re-sign him, then sure, just let him keep bombing away. Because if you sign him to 2 years, $20 million, 2 years, $30 million next year, he's still probably going to have positive trade value.
Well, of course. And here's another, you know, argument for that. He hasn't even played 4,500 NBA career minutes yet.
Yeah.
So his legs are not shot. Nope. He's not a guy who relies greatly on athletic prowess. Like, yeah. He's a shooter, so that's also going to age gracefully. He's a guy you can realistically give. I know that, you know, the executive said that no team really were interested in giving Bertans like a 4-year deal, but I wouldn't, if the money were right, I wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to stay relevant for a long time.
It's wild that his career 3-point rate is almost 75%.
I mean, he's a guy who's just leaned into it, right?
Yeah, you might as well. If you shoot that well, hell, man. That's good for you.
Yep.
All right, Mort, since you mentioned the Detroit Pistons, let's go there next.
Yeah, so we need to have a conversation about Blake Griffin.
Yeah.
Because the Pistons are, they're stuck, and they need to make a call, and they actually need to make a call right now.
Mm-hmm.
Griffin right now is having the worst season of his career. Mm-hmm. He looks visibly just not the same as not the same guy. He's averaging 16 points, 4.4 rebounds, 3.3 assists. He's only played 15 games. He's been injured. I think it's the knee, and he's looked just not like Blake Griffin himself.
Right.
However, last year he was an all-star. Averaging 24.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, almost 5.5 assists, getting to the line 7 times a night, and shooting the 3 7 times a night at 36%. Yeah. He was a legitimate all-star. So here's what it comes down to. What are the Pistons' expectations for Blake? Is it return to the form that he showed last year? Or is this the Blake Griffin that they're going to get moving forward? Maybe slightly better version, but someone who is not going to be an all-star caliber player.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they think it's the latter, they need to dump him immediately for their own sake, because he's on their cap for a lot of money. Even next year, like right now, this year, he's earning $34 million, 34.2. Next year, it's 36.6. And then he has a player option for almost $39 million, and if this is the new him, he will, you know, take that. He will opt into that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have some options here. Maybe there's a team out there who's like, nope, we're absolutely certain that Blake is going to return to all-star status. Then you get them on the phone, and you probably figure things out.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that's where I would go. But I don't know about you.
Does he have positive trade value right now?
No, he doesn't, not right now. And that's kind of the problem, because like it would be a gamble to hang on to him and just kind of wait it out to see if his trade value increases again.
Yeah.
Because if it doesn't, you're screwed. But maybe right now, because the All-Star season was so close, like it was just last year.
Right.
You could have a couple teams who are interested in making a deal. Maybe not to fair value or what you presume to be fair value.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can get out of his contract without having to relinquish a young guy or a pick.
Yeah.
I think you do it immediately.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean,
yeah.
I do think this is in part injury related. I mean, he played through the torn meniscus during the playoffs. He had knee and hamstring injuries, and he missed a good chunk of the early season because of that. And he just like does not physically look right. Has not physically looked right since. He's been out a couple games recently as well.
Right.
I mean, it seems like this is going to go down as just a lost year for him, unfortunately, which is a shame, especially considering how well he played last year. Lord knows he has a concerning injury history prior to this. I mean, last year was the first time since 2013-14 that he played in at least 70 games in a season. You know, he had the broken hand from when he punched someone, like the team assistant when he was with the Clippers. He's had a number, I mean, even dating back to his, you know, he missed his whole rookie year with a knee injury as well. So the injury history is what would scare me and probably any suitor here, but as you mentioned, also, like, pick an advanced metric, any advanced metric, and he is probably having his worst season by far. Like, this is the first year, you know, his PER has been above 20 or, like, in the neighborhood of 20 for basically his entire career.
Right.
This year, he's at 13.1, putting up negative marks in value over replacement player, box plus minus. He had never done that before. His win
share. It's an outlier, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, his win shares per 48 right now are 0.016. Last year, he's at 0.146. I mean, he's never been below 0.120 before this year. So I do think if you sell him right now, you are selling at the absolute low point of his value.
Mm-hmm.
But given the injury history, I agree. If you can talk someone else into, oh yeah, this is just an outlier, he's going to be fine. Like, that's the hope, of course. But, you know, there's also the potential that maybe, like, I think when he gets healthy, he will be back closer to the player he was last year. But maybe nagging injuries are just going to always be a thing with him. Like, maybe we don't see a fully healthy Blake Griffin. Like, maybe, it sucks to say this, but maybe last year was the last time we see a fully healthy Blake Griffin through most of the season.
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a problem, isn't it?
And, yeah.
And, I mean, they gambled. They wanted someone to pair with Andre.
Right.
And they found someone who could function as a playmaker, as a rebounder, a shooter as well. Like, he really improved as a shooter. Like, one thing we need to give Blake credit for generally is how he just kind of reinvented himself as a basketball player.
Definitely.
Injuries aside, like, this dude came in as a jumper and he just developed a fundamentally sound game.
Mm-hmm.
Kudos for that.
Yeah.
But the injuries and that contract, it's just, I'm not saying it's John Wall territory at all, because, you know, he doesn't have an Achilles issue.
Right.
Which can really just hamper a player career, but it's so much money. It's so much money, and you don't really know what's going to happen next year with Drummond. You have no idea.
Right.
I probably would cut bait.
And that's the other question. What do the Pistons do with Drummond, knowing, you know, he's having a great season again, averaging almost 18 points, 17 rebounds a game, you know, almost two steals, two blocks. He has a $28.6 million player option that he has all but said he's going to decline. He will be one of the top free agents on the market next summer. Do you trade him now in fear of losing him in the summer? Or do you think, like, oh, well, if this is the new Blake Griffin, like, Andre Drummond is our centerpiece moving forward?
So here's the thing with Drummond, right? I think some teams will look at him much like Chicago looked at Otto Porter, as a pseudo free agent acquisition.
Yeah.
The problem with that is he's an expiring contract.
Right.
So he can leave, and he's an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah.
So if you trade for him, you trade for him with basically the hope that he would re-sign with you.
Right.
But with no insurances whatsoever. And I think that lessens his trade value. At the same time, you're also, whoever you are who is interested in his services, you're looking at that, you know, the free agency class next year, knowing that it's really, really bad. Mm-hmm. And you know that Drummond has a lot of value in terms of, as a player. Like, he's a great player. We can't take that from him whatsoever. Like, he's a guy who gets you over 1,100 points and 1,100 rebounds, 100 plus blocks, 100 plus steals every single year. Like, he's tremendously effective and consistent. And he rarely misses games. Now, it only takes one team. If one team maxes him out completely, like, do you go along with that? I feel if you're a team that wants him on the long term and you trade for him, it comes with the expectation of, okay, we need to max him this summer.
Yeah, right. That's kind of the overarching question with Drummond is, like, is he a max player? And nope. That goes back to, right, is he a guy who you would feel good about giving a max contract to? No. He's not Kawhi. Like, it goes back to my, you know, fundamental theory that, like, too many guys get max deals compared to their production. Like, he is the Otto Porter type of max player, versus a Kawhi Leonard or a James Harden or a LeBron James. Those guys you feel great about giving a max deal to. You know, Andre Drummond I put even below like a Kyrie Irving in terms of do you feel good about this max deal.
Right.
If you trade for him, you do get his bird rights, so you can exceed the salary cap to re-sign him. And again, knowing how few teams will have significant cap space this summer, and the ones that do have cap space are not going to be contenders anytime soon, maybe you trade for him and just pray the market squeezes him. But Atlanta would be the one team that I'm scared of for Drummond in particular, because conceptually, him and Trae Young could be a very good fit together.
Yeah, that's the team that I've thought about as well. It just makes sense. But the thing is, like, should they max him out or anything close to it from next year on and onwards? It really comes down to that damn contract in 2020.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
He's a difficult player to peg.
Yeah. I think he's going to go in assuming he's getting maxed.
And I wouldn't blame him. I honestly wouldn't blame him. Look at his production. Fair enough, he's having a very weird season in terms of the turnovers this year. But outside of that, he's incredibly consistent and like shooting better from the foul line. And you know he's in his prime, so you're also going to get the best years out of him, which is a positive, especially because he just rarely, if ever, misses games.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that you're getting the league's absolute best rebounder, which isn't, like, I think it's wrong for people to just automatically dismiss the whole idea that Blake is like, or sorry, that DeAndre is, you know, not a, I don't want to say max player, but a player not worthy of a good contract, of a very expensive contract. I think he is worth an expensive contract. I just think there's a difference in a max deal where you pay like in the plus 30 levels, whereas he probably should be sitting on, what, 23, 24
a year? Right. That's where you feel more comfortable. But he's going to get paid more than you will feel comfortable paying him next year.
Exactly. And it just comes down to, will that contract hinder the movements that I have, you know, moving forward if I'm the team? If I'm looking at additional upgrades, I have to look at that contract all the time.
Yeah.
What does that contract allow me to do?
Yep, I would agree with that.
But so just going back to Blake, just to wrap him up, I probably, because I just made up my mind, I would move him. I would. I know that I would be selling low. I know that I would. It's not optimal timing, but I would, if I'm the Pistons, I'm just not ready to run the risk of, you know, seeing his trade value diminish even more.
Would you give up assets to trade him?
I wouldn't give up like Sekou Doumbouya
or
anything major. Like, would I give up, you know,
like a future first?
No. Like, I would give up like Kyrie Thomas and Mikhail Yuk.
Okay.
No, it depends on the first, though. Is it protected?
Sure. Yeah. How well? Are you protected first?
And does it turn into 2 seconds a couple years down the road then?
Let's say it's one of those that, like, lottery protected for 3 years and turns into 2 seconds.
Yeah, I would do that.
Wow.
I would do that. And look, that this is me being, you know, very non-progressive. This is me being scared.
Right. Yeah.
Because, I just don't know. It's Blake. He's got, like, the injury history. He's also, he's on the wrong side of 30 now.
Right.
There's just so many things that goes into it.
It's a reasonable fear to have, and I think it's something that, like, the Pistons are definitely kind of at an inflection point right now, where it's like, all right, you need to choose a direction, because between Blake now and Andre in 2020, you need to make a decision about the direction of your franchise. Do you think you can build around these two guys moving forward? If not, you're either going to need to trade one of them, because Drummond's going to force your hand in 7 months.
Yeah. I mean, we agree that there's no way that Drummond picks up his player option, right?
Oh, God, no. Absolutely not. Unless, knock on wood, unless he suffers an Achilles injury or something.
Oh, yeah, no. Like, presuming health, of course.
Yeah, a fully healthy Drummond, zero chance.
No, he's not going to pick that up. Okay.
Yeah, no way.
And also, and this is just me, just side benefit because I have to bring it up. Like, if you trade Blake, that's more minutes for Christian Wood.
Oh, God. I thought you were going to say Sekou, either way.
Oh, well, that too.
Yeah.
I mean, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Then Christian Wood would be the best forward on the Knicks if they trade Blake, right?
Or the Pistons, you mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry.
He would be the best forward on the Knicks. Yeah, that too. Don't worry. Yeah. That's not... Yeah. Yeah. No, I think he would. I think this year he's actually been... Right now, because Blake has struggled so much, I would actually make the argument that Christian Wood has been the best forward. And I even said second best forward. He's outliving my expectations. It's tremendous. So I actually had a question for you regarding the Pistons. Are they one of the most weird situations in the NBA right now when you really look at what they have on the roster, their salary structure, and everything?
Definitely. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to see the long-term direction here.
Yeah.
Which is why these next couple months are so important.
I'm just leaning towards blowing everything up in Detroit.
Yeah.
And starting over, not building around Sekou because he's 18, but...
Right.
Or did he just turn 19? He may have. But no. Day after tomorrow, actually. He's not there yet.
Yeah.
But you need... So you need a prospect you can build around, but you have some pieces. You have Luke Kennard, who I think is great. Mm-hmm. You have Sekou, who's a wonderful prospect. You can hang on to Christian Wood. There is Mikhailiuk, who's a good shooter. Like, there are guys you can hang on to. Nothing is great there. You still need, like, a top-tier prospect. But if you blow it up, and even if you give up the top 15 or the lottery-protected first to get out of Blake Griffin's deal, you're going to be so bad for the next couple of years anyway that pick is probably not going to be relinquished. It's going to be converted into the 2 seconds.
That's a fair point. But, I mean, the East is also very bad. So there's a chance you could back into the playoffs unintentionally.
Oh, yeah. Well, the East.
Are there any other teams in the East that you think need to make a move? Seller-wise, Orlando.
So, you and I often talk about longevity and long-term chemistry. You know, the more that a team is, or the longer a team is together, mm-hmm. the more they know each other, the more they're going to succeed. I feel the current iteration of the Orlando Magic, they've been together for a long while now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know they made the playoffs, but ultimately, like, they're not a good team. They have players who, you know, become all-stars and lift up their games. Like, this year it's Evan Fournier who's lived up this game. I don't know if he's an all-star, but I wouldn't say so. But he's been better.
Mm-hmm.
Vooch was an all-star last year.
Yep.
The players who are supposed to be the key players are just never put in a position to succeed. They've played together for a long while, and they just haven't found this new level.
Yeah.
I would be leaning towards blowing it up in Orlando. I mean, not that everyone must go. Like, you hang on to Jonathan Isaac, you hang on to Mo Bamba, but maybe that's it. Or maybe Markelle Fultz, I'm not sure yet. I think he's had a decent season compared to, like, the very low expectations coming in.
Right.
But if Orlando went the route of blowing it up and send out Vooch, Gordon, Fournier, Roz, Amino, DJ Augustine, Kim Birch, everyone else, I wouldn't hate it. I really wouldn't hate it. I think they're stuck.
Yeah. I mean, their offense is just so bad.
It really is. And, like, Aaron Gordon right now, you're just killing his trade value, and which is impressive because if you can kill trade value on a guy who's working on a declining deal...
Right.
Like, you have to be a special level of incompetent to do that, and somehow the Magic are pulling it off.
Yeah, I mean... He also deserves some of the blame for that. It's just like, we're talking about guys who have stagnated, you know, Aaron Gordon. It's like every year you just are waiting to see him take that leap. And whether because of shoddy roster construction or because of, you know, his own lack of development, just hasn't happened yet for him. And you like...
But which is it, though?
Probably a little of both.
Yeah. I mean, I assume you're right, but I also think if you have created an environment where you're not going to give him the necessary responsibility,
right,
or you have him have less and less responsibility as he ages,
Yeah.
Like, you're just going to force him into a situation where he's like, okay, and he's going to stagnate.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, I think he has higher upside. We talked about Gary Harris, too, last episode.
Right.
You move both of those guys, say, for each other, and they probably both have a higher ceiling than what they've showed in their current respective situations.
Oh, you know what? That's interesting. Should a team, like, let's say a team like Charlotte, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe they should just go look for guys who are generally underused and underappreciated on their teams.
Yeah.
Like, just make offers for Aaron Gordon and Gary Harris and just go, you know what? You're not playing as much, or your guys are not playing that much. You know, you probably want out of their deals, and both Orlando and Denver are like, we could afford giving those guys up, and you pay under market value for them, and then you just unleash them in Charlotte.
Right.
That would be fun. I would actually begin to watch the Hornets a lot more if that happened, and I've actually watched them quite a fair bit this year because I love Devontae Graham. But
right.
I mean, that would be interesting. There are deals to be had, or there are good bargains to be had in those guys.
Definitely. For sure. Yeah, I mean, Orlando, they kind of remind me of the Pelicans, and like, they're going to be in trade rumors, but I understand why they are. The Pelicans are slightly different just because they came in with such high expectations this season, and then like the Zion injury derailed them.
Yeah, they actually have Zion on their roster. Right, the right. Magic, whose best player is arguably Jonathan Isaac. Yeah.
No, I mean, Isaac's a really good player, though.
Yeah, but he's not Zion Williamson, like, in terms of potential, is my point. They don't have that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, the draft was, for a team that was in the lottery for like six straight years, the lottery was very unkind to them. And then they sold low on Oladipo, and they made a ton of mistakes. But, you know, the Pelicans, at least, like, they're going to be in trade rumors just because they've gotten off to such a slow start this year.
Right.
Mark Stein of the New York Times recently reported that as of now, they are not really taking offers on J.J. Redick, but they are. He said Drew Holiday is available via trade. It would surely cost a significant amount to pry him away, but this is a notable change in status given how unavailable he was to interested teams last season.
Oh, my God, I know where you're going. You're going with a Gordon for Drew package, right?
I don't know. I mean, I don't necessarily think the Pelicans, I understand why they would listen to offers.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're 7-23 right now? Like, of course you're going to listen to offers, but I don't know. I don't feel I wouldn't feel urgency to move Drew Holiday if I'm the Pelicans, because he's under contract for at least this year and next year, and I believe he has a player option in 2020. Yeah. $27 million player option, which he is probably going to decline.
It depends on the next couple of years, of course. But yeah.
I mean,
if his current rate, I would probably agree.
Yeah. Just because that free agent class, 2021 free agent class, is going to be so loaded, or has the potential to be so loaded, that so many teams are going to keep cap space open for that year. So I guess it depends on, you know, if LeBron, Kawhi, Paul George, if all of those guys opt out, then that's going to create more competition. And maybe Drew says, oh, okay, maybe I'll wait till 2022 so I can have more of a runway and be like the top free agent instead of the second tier guy. But if he turns out to be one of the top free agents in 2021, he's very clearly turning down that player option.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, other than Favors and Etwan Moore, they're going to obviously re-sign Brandon Ingram next year. Like, most of their guys are under contract. Like, they could very easily just run this thing back next year, have a healthy Zion. You know, I would just be hesitant to move Drew Holiday without seeing him play a single regular season game without Zion Williamson.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. I mean, unless there's a Godfather package coming in.
Yeah, right. And there very well might be. I mean, Drew Holiday, if he actually is available, is probably the biggest potential game changer in terms of, you know, add that guy to a contender.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be easy just because of, you know, it's not a Davis Bertans situation where he's making $7 million. Like, Drew is making $26.2 million this year. So you either need a big expiring contract, or you need to have, you know, someone on a big contract that you're willing to part ways with.
Right.
But put that guy on the right team, and you know, it could be even a bigger impact than Marc Gasol to the Raptors last year.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. For sure. For sure. I mean, no contest. Drew is that type of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I do think they should have a conversation with JJ Redick. I think it would. I mean, you know, JJ is 35 years old. He's never missed the playoffs.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how much he cares about that streak, and that shouldn't like be the reason that you make a move. Mm-hmm. But I think it would greatly benefit the Pelicans just because of his age to just say, "Hey, JJ, let's talk. Like,
yeah.
You know, how do you feel about this playoff streak? We're obviously not going to make it. Do you want to go somewhere where you can continue that? And like this is like you and I talked about this before this show started, and you said, you know, this is not what you signed up for. Like, basically go to JJ Redick and say, we know that this isn't what you signed up for. You wanted more wins. You wanted a more competitive environment. This is not it. If you're interested in staying put, we'd love to have you. If not, we'll definitely accommodate you and find a trade to, maybe not a contender, but just a playoff team.
Right, right.
And, you know, just by offering that, that's going to be a very positive thing for the Pelicans throughout the league. Like, agents will definitely take note of that. NBA veterans will take note of that. Like, that would be a classy thing to do.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it would be an appreciated gesture. Like, he's at $13.5 million this year. So it's kind of in the middle of between, you know, a Bertans where it's super easy to match his salary and a Love or Gallinari or Drew Holiday where it's pretty hard to match his salary, barring a bloated expiring. You could probably cobble together. Some contenders can cobble together a package for Redick somewhat easily, but others would, like Philly, I've seen him, Redick mentioned as a target for Philly. It cannot happen. There's just, they don't have the pieces to match salaries really. Unless you're, you know, cobbling together like a 3-for-1 or a 4-for-1, in which case, which two players are the Pelicans waiving? You know, like these, it's just not going to happen. So, like, could the Clippers do Redick for Mo Harkless? Sure. But why?
Yeah, they're looking to move Mo for Marcus Morris, it seems like.
Mm. Yeah.
But I will say this. I mean, JJ's, like, he's a previous Clipper, so he would come in immediately, know the system because he's played with under Pop or Doc. Sorry, Doc. Wow. It's December and it's dark. I can't figure things out. That's bad. There is some sort of added value in him returning to a team where he knows the system.
Yeah,
like the adjustment period would be just non-existent.
And he and Landry Shamet could be teammates again. Shamet could continue to learn under JJ.
This is
wing.
True. Yeah. And he's also, I think JJ is the kind of personality that Kawhi just likes to be around. Like that competitive fire.
JJ's teammates do seem to like him a lot. So
yeah. Yeah. But Joel Embiid, like, he misses two guys. He misses Jimmy and he misses JJ.
Yeah. He's quickly growing to detest the rest of the remaining roster, unfortunately. Yeah. But no, I mean, I you know, Harkless in particular is that I wouldn't want to trade a good defensive wing for JJ Redick, who, for all that he adds offensively, will expose you defensively. I think
you have enough offense. You have Lou, have Montrezl, you have Kawhi, and you have PG.
Yeah, and you're built around your defense in particular. Like you're building around. Okay, we're possibly going to see the Lakers at some point in the playoffs. We better have a ton of wing defenders to throw at LeBron. Swapping out one in Harkless for JJ Redick, who is not going to defend LeBron at all, or if he is, you were in a lot of trouble. That one doesn't make any sense. But I agree overall that, like, the Pelicans, the only guy who should be totally untouchable is Zion.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't be in a rush to move anyone. I wouldn't be selling JJ for like a second round pick.
Right.
Like, if you can get something good for him, great. But otherwise, he'll be at $13 million expiring next year, at which, you know, at that point, teams are going to be looking to dump contracts to make room for 2021. Then I think you can get something pretty good for him.
So basically, we just brought up the Pelicans and sellers, but we agree they shouldn't be sellers?
Yeah, well, I kind of feel that way about Orlando, too. I understand why they would be, but you know, right now they're tied for the eighth seed. And like they're
in the East. You brought up the East beforehand as well, as like, hey, even if the Detroit Pistons blew it up, they could accidentally fall ass backwards into the eighth seed.
Gordon is the one guy who I think they should trade just because they've had this logjam forever. It's not getting any better. But like, I don't think they need to urgently make a move. Like, they're going to make the playoffs most likely just because the East is so terrible. Are they going to make noise when they're there? No. But I don't think they care about that.
The Magic is one of those, you know, silent farts that just takes a room.
Right.
Really. I mean, I'm on the blow it up for the Magic. I really am. I don't think there's, like, with certain, you know, caveats that Jonathan Isaac is a part of the future and possibly also Mo Bamba, but yeah, we'll see.
Then let's wrap up more with one team that I think we could probably agree that should be sellers, even though right now they are the seventh seed in the West, and that is the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah.
So they have...
We already talked about Gallinari, right?
Right, and I think that's the big chip. I mean, because Chris Paul, they have... They're openly shopping him, but no one's taking that deal on. Not during the season. I have seen the idea floated that, like, as part of a trade, it would be contingent upon him saying, all right, I'm going to decline my $44.2 million player option in 2021. Because, you know, like, Miami was mentioned as a potential destination.
Sorry to interrupt, but I have a question about that because I'm at Basketball Reference. It does not say he has an option in 2021-2022.
I'm almost positive he does.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that changes things a little bit. He's going to pick it up either way because it's $44.2 million, but that's...
right.
Okay, I just wanted to get everything
on. And because I think it would send a bad message to the... You know, he's the president of the Players Union, right? Or vice president? He's the president, I think.
So what is Michelle Roberts then?
She's the executive director.
She's the executive director. All those titles. I have no idea. Chris Paul is a big deal within the NBPA.
Right, so...
Official title.
And he helped get this rule change. It was the over 36 rule. Now it's over 38. He helped get this changed so he could benefit and get this massive contract at his age. He is not turning down the player option. No. It's not going to happen. So, yeah. So that's one where, sure, they'll shop him. They're not going to find a taker. Gallo, as you mentioned, he's the obvious. Yes, he's a $22.6 million expiring. We talked about him with Portland last time.
Yeah.
In particular, I still think he's a great trade target, and he's in the same boat as Drummond, where sure, he's going to be a free agent this summer. You acquire him now, you get his bird rights, you can go over the cap to re-sign him, knowing the limited market out there this summer with teams with cap space, knowing that Gallinari is 31. Knowing that he has a somewhat lengthy injury history, is he really going to want to go to Atlanta or Cleveland or Memphis for the rest of his prime? Probably not. So you might be able to use the market against him in that capacity. And I'm not saying you're going to get him for like the mid-level exception, but you know, maybe you get him for 3 years, 75 instead of 3 years, 100.
Right.
Which is... pretty good. So Gallinari is a guy who, again, I know they're the 7th seed in the East right now, but they should be willing to give him up if they can get something good of value in return. And I would think, you know, again, it's going to take a big expiring to get that. We've seen Kevin O'Connor of the Ringer reported that they're willing to take on long-term salary. So, you know, we were talking earlier this episode about Cleveland being willing to dangle Tristan Thompson or Jordan Clarkson and say, yeah, we'll take bad salary back. If you offer Danilo Gallinari and say, yeah, we'll take your bad salary back for Danilo, you're getting something good in return for him.
Yeah, another first rounder.
Yeah.
Right. So in regards to that, I mean, if they do that, if they pull the trigger and they would have so many draft picks in their treasure trove, do you think they would be willing to relinquish one of them to get out of the Chris Paul contract?
At that point, probably.
because I've seen something floated on Twitter, just, you know, Bulls fans, but it was interesting. Otto Porter and Tomas Satoransky for Paul. And then I don't know if you add a pick or not.
From OKC, you mean?
Yeah.
Or from the Bulls? Well, the Bulls would include a second just for
fun. They would include at minimum 2 seconds.
Right.
I didn't even know. Like, right. A smart team would probably be able to squeeze out additional compensation from OKC simply because Paul's deal runs an extra year at $44.2
million. Yep. Yep.
But I found the idea, you know, I wouldn't do it if I'm the Bulls, but apparently a lot of people are, or not a lot of people, but at least some people were definitely clamoring for that one.
Hmm.
I don't know where I stand on that.
I wouldn't do that. If the Thunder were including a pick, maybe.
Yeah, but, right?
I don't know. Wing depth is just such an issue for the Bulls already. I know Otto's hurt, and like this is probably going to be the last year for him, but man, I don't know.
Porter has a player option next year for $28.5 million. So basically, The Thunder wouldn't get any expiring contracts.
Right.
Like Satoransky's is at $10 million for this year, next year, and then there's like a partial guarantee for $5 million in 2021-2022.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And he's just Paul is like a win now type of piece. I don't see why he. You know, he would accept going to a team that is clearly rebuilding.
Right. I mean, Paul has been playing well this year. Like
he has, yeah. I mean, ironically, again, talking about the Bulls, he destroyed them here
A week ago. Yeah. Right. I mean, he's averaging basically 16-6-4, almost 2 steals a game, shooting almost 38% from three. I don't think the Thunder are going to be... Like, right now, I don't think they feel any urgency to move him, and I don't think... They would give up a first for him with him right now. Maybe that changes in the summer. But to me, it's like Danilo is clearly their top guy. They feel urgency to move. And then if they can find a taker for Paul, Steven Adams, Dennis Schroeder, I bet they're willing to move any of them.
Oh, yeah. They should be willing to move Dennis for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't even think that's going to take... Like a ton, necessarily.
No, I mean, I think Schroeder probably has positive trade value right now.
Right, but I don't think it's not going to be like, oh, we need to find a fully fledged starter and additional draft compensation or anything of the sort.
Oh, yeah.
You can probably get Dennis Schroeder for a package that doesn't break your back.
Yeah, I think an expiring and a draft pick will probably do it.
Right.
But with OKC, for all of these guys, they don't. It's not like Cleveland where you have like the John Hensons and the Matthew Dellavedovas and the Brandon Knights, where it's like, yeah, we don't care what we get back. Just give us a top 45 protected second, and we'll call it a day. None of these guys, like these guys, all should give them something positive back in return. They're all productive players. Like Schroeder's averaging almost 18 points a game, shooting nearly 47% this year. Like he's playing well for them.
Oh yeah, he's been fantastic. I mean, I wrote an article for Forbes a couple months back saying I used him as an example. You know how teams are begun to just give up a ton of draft picks to get like a star.
Yeah,
I kind of wanted to pivot on that and saying, well, why not give up a lot of draft picks for a guy who's clearly going to be a future star where you have a long term team control instead of giving up 4 draft picks for a guy on a 2-year deal, Shy is something I would give up if I was a team had a ton of draft picks. I mean,
yeah,
but I would hand them over immediately.
I feel like he is. I don't want to call him untouchable because.
Oh, I'm probably there.
I think it would take a monster package.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
yeah, but I mean, like, I think if someone offered that monster package, OKC would at least consider it. But it's. They are in no rush to move him. He is, clearly taking off in his second year. He was good in his first year. He's great now. He's like I think it's fair to say a future all-star.
For sure. I mean, that's on the low end, right?
Yeah. So I would be surprised. It wouldn't shock me if they traded any of Paul, Gallo, Schroeder, Adams. It would shock me if they traded Shai.
Oh, yeah, no, I wasn't suggesting that that would happen at all. Yeah, I'm just basically saying that, that would be the logic from it. Yeah,
totally, yeah. I mean, it makes total sense to go after a guy like that. It's just like, good luck.
Yeah, yeah, you would have to pay through the nose.
Yeah, for sure. Mort, any other teams that we need to hit on?
No, you know what? I actually have brought up the Spurs.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but honestly, like, we've talked about them so much over the past, you know, 5 and 7 episodes. Like, we've routinely gone back to them, so I don't think there's much to say. I mean, DeRozan has a player option next year. LaMarcus Aldridge has, you know, $24 million on the books for next year as well. Yeah, you probably want to move forward and start something anew with them or without them. But like, who's going to take those deals at this point and what for?
Yeah. And
I'm just not seeing it.
I just always come back to, I can't imagine them plunging into a full-fledged rebuild until Pop is gone.
Yeah, exactly. So there's not really all that much to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think we identified the, like, obvious sellers. I mean, could the Warriors get involved with D'Angelo Russell? Sure, possibly. I mean, Memphis is going to shop around Andre Iguodala, but other than that, you know, I don't think they're in a rush to blow up anything. So, you know, right now the playoff picture is so muddled in both conferences that I think there are going to be more buyers and sellers, especially because the title race seems, you know, maybe not as wide open as we thought coming into the year. Like, the Bucks, Clippers, Lakers have established themselves, I think, as the clear front runners at this point. But, you know, if a guy like a Gallinari or a Drew Holiday or even a Bertans, maybe some team can talk themselves into, you know, this guy can be a difference maker. This guy can put us on the level of those other teams. So I think it'll be possibly a quieter trade deadline than we've seen in years past, but maybe not. Who knows?
Who's the most untalked about name that who you could see be moved?
I mean, does Bogdan Bogdanovic count, or is he in the Bertans camp of the
Twin Devils? Oh, no, everyone is talking about him. Like, I'm talking about who's the deal out there who's no one's talking about being traded, who could actually see himself be traded.
Alec Burks?
Someone of significance.
He's a shooter.
Yeah. But I'm talking about, like, a starting caliber player. Like, someone who, yeah, who's a big name.
Miles Turner.
That's a good one. Yeah. I think so, too. I mean, it seems like they're moving forward with just a bonus, right?
Yeah. But I mean, they're fifth in the East right now. Like, and they've won 5 straight games. I don't think they feel urgency to blow it up.
No, but, I mean, I would get preferring and choosing Sabonis moving forward over Turner, who is just...
Yeah.
Like, we talk about Aaron Gordon in terms of stagnation.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's a good place to wrap up. So I'm
a very negative place, very depressing place.
Well, so our next episode, we're going to do something a little different. So keep an eye out for that. And then I am actually going to be off for a few weeks going to Spain and Portugal with the wife, so Mort will be holding it down in my stead. So keep an eye out for, we'll have a fun one next episode that I'll be gone for a little bit. But until then, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. I'm now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I can't wait to be a crappy host when you're away, because I just do not have the same skills that you do of introducing the entire show. It's going to be like, hello, let's get started.
Perfect. You're being time efficient. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? That's what we're going to call it. Let's forget about the incompetent level. We're just going to call it efficient. I'm down with that.
Boom. Got it. All right. Later, man.
Later.